everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. It's election day here in the United States, and I voted this morning. I was surprised at what an emotional experience it was for me. We live in New York City in the county of Queens. I believe there are more languages spoken here than anywhere else in the world, and going to our place for voting, you can see the whole world there. People from all over that have come to live here or have been born here. The volunteers, amazing diverse group of people. And I just felt this profound connection to history and the fight that many people have been a part of to make life better for everyone, to make it more equitable and just. And I'm welling up right now just thinking about it. And for those of you who are listening to this broadcast in the future, don't tell us what happens. We'll find out tonight with the election results. And what many people are talking about is breaking the glass ceiling, especially for women, being able to reach the highest office in this nation as president. And we'll find out later if that indeed happens. I hope so. But we have a lot more work to do after we break the glass ceiling in order to make things more equitable and just, not only for all of our fellow human beings, but for the non-human animals that we share our home planet Earth with. And we're going to be talking about that a lot today. We're going to be talking about fictions in culture with both of my guests today. I have Gary DeMattei for part one, my co-founder at Responsible Eating and Living. And then in part two, we'll be talking with Robert Grillo, the founder of Free From Harm and the author of a new book called Farm to Fable. Fiction and culture, it's a powerful concept. So I want to bring on my guest, Gary DeMattei. How are you today, Gary DeMattei?
Hello, Karen Hartglass. How are you? How are you?
I'm good. You voted?
Yeah, I just got here. Yeah, I mean, I was going to send this guy over who actually voted before me. There was a big, long line, and he kind of talked like this. You know, he was from Queens, and he says, you get a free coffee? You get a free coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. The line is about as long as it is when you get a free coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. Like, you ever get a free coffee at Dunkin' Donuts? And I said, gee, no, I haven't. He said, oh, you got to go. You got to go to Dunkin' Donuts. You got to get a free coffee. And I said, well, when do they give you free coffee? Once a month or so. You know, you get a free coffee, and then it's nice. But the line is longer here than it is at Dunkin' Donuts when they give you the free coffee.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's too funny.
It was a very long line. And for artistic license, I said that I just voted, that I actually got up at 6 a.m. and walked across the street. The polls were open, and the place was packed, and it was, as you mentioned, it was electricity. It was electrifying.
Wait a minute, Gary. We're in New York City. There was electricity. We don't say electricity here.
Hey, yeah, electricity. There was a lot of electricity in the air. It's amazing. But we're talking about food, right? And how food has a lot. I love Robert's title of his book, Farm to Fable. That's great because, you know, fiction and fables and all of these untruths that we hear, and hopefully we're all going to clear that up today, in addition to having some fun, because I'm sure everybody's a bit stressed out about the world and how things have been going, and just the, I know this word is being passed around a lot on social media, but just the vitriol that people are throwing at each other, and the thing that was nice this morning about being in a room full of people, as you mentioned, a diverse group of people, is that everyone was so what I remember being human was all about. Everybody was kind. Everybody was compassionate. They said things like, "Hey, I'll stand in line all day. This is very important to me." And I know there's a lot of criticism about one time every 4 years we vote for president, and that's, you know, and people feel that that's, that they actually can make a difference, but then the rest of the years, everybody just goes back to doing what they normally do. But this felt different to me, and hopefully we can keep the momentum going, and we can keep wanting good things to happen. And I think our job as activists is to let people know that, as you just mentioned, there's so much more to it that we're not getting. And so let's try and shed a little light on that. Like these myths, like these fables, like these fictions, as you said.
Yeah. I want to say, you mentioned vitriol, and there's no vitriol here. I often say this, and I try to say it every time, but I don't always remember. Here on It's All About Food, we tune in love. This right. is an opportunity for all of us listening now and listening later to focus on that concept of love.
Right. Very important.
It is very important. And in this moment where people are so divisive everywhere we go, sometimes the only thing that I can do is just envision pure white light around them and find the good. Because right. we all have good in us. And it's these fictions in culture that make us adapt and go one way versus another. And that's yeah. where knowledge and education and truth really matter. I think probably as humanity evolved, we looked right. for reasons for things we didn't understand. We right. made up stories. We're right. a group of storytellers.
Right, and a lot of the fictions were created to control the populations.
And, there's that too, yeah.
And a lot of the fiction is also based on fear. And, you know, for example, with respect to food, which is what the program is about, it's all about food. You know, there's a lot of fear when someone is asked. I just recently, the other day, we were in Florida traveling, and as you know, you were there too. And a friend of mine, I got together with some dear friends, old friends from way back when. We all sort of met there. And one of them came up to me and said, "So you've lost so much weight and you're a vegan now. But come on, tell me, isn't it true what they say? I mean, aren't you deplete in protein now because of that? Isn't there a huge risk of you getting cancer because you eat soy? Isn't there?" And then all of a sudden there was all of these fears that they have heard that we have obviously done programs about at Responsible Eating and Living, proving that these are just fables, that they're just untruths, that they're fiction. And but people are still out there thinking that if they adopt a plant-based diet, a vegan diet, they're not going to get enough protein and it's going to harm them. And I think that's the big myth right there that keeps popping up. And, you know, and she was very kind in presenting it to me because she really legitimately, sincerely wanted to know, is this true? Am I going to get enough protein if I go to a plant-based diet? And I said, yes. And look at our program about soy, where you've done the soy story, and there's so many things that we're trying to bust all the myths, especially the myth about soy and about protein and about so many other things that people are being told. Oh, you can't adopt a plant-based diet because you won't get enough protein and you'll get rickets and you'll
fear is so powerful, isn't it? Fear.
It's the whole thing. Fear is the whole thing.
I think people are afraid that their foundation will crumble underneath them when they shift in their ideologies.
And oh, for sure.
It's so hard to hear them. And I think the best skill to have, and I'm not exactly sure how to develop it, but to be totally open and objective to everything we see, to kind of wipe away all the assumptions that we have and see things as they really are, that's almost an impossibility.
Right. Well, you know, there's a big, like, with this election and the media, for example, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how many people have been slamming the media. I'm certainly one of the people that is really amazed at how the media has just gone completely berserk on this whole campaign between, you know, the two candidates. And the thing that they really base most of their untruths, their fictions, their fables on, you know, is just, it's all fear-based. It's all, the candidates have done their share of it, but the media then just takes it and runs with it to the point where none of it makes any more, you know, makes any sense. And there's so much of the watching and the listening that people are doing instead of, like today, getting out in the middle, standing in a line of people and understanding that, wow, you know, it's going to be up to us to clean up this mess after this election, because the media is going to go on to their next villain. They're going to go on to their next creation of showbiz creation. It's all fiction, and they're going to create the next villain, and they're going to create the next hero, and they're going to, you know, scare us all into watching and tweeting and Facebooking and Instagramming all of the fears and anxieties that we have in just trying to live our day-to-day lives. But it's going to be up to us to bring out the brooms and sweep it up. And there's going to be all kinds of different people doing that, not just Democrats, not just Republicans, not just independents, not just Green Party members, but the other parties that people want to belong to. But it's going to be everybody. And so my big thing is, vote with your dollar. It sounds kind of simple-minded, but I'm a simple-minded guy.
It's not simple-minded. It's very profound and powerful.
But it's true that we have the power, yet we are made to feel powerless by groups like the media. But in reality, so the whole idea, the thing that got me started on this was, and this connects with food, and I'll just get to my point in a minute. But we feel powerless, and so when we feel powerless, we feel that our only choice is to consume. You know, that's going to make us feel better. And so, you know, when we feel like we don't have anywhere to turn, we go out and buy something. And so the media is there to sell us stuff. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're there to sell a product. And in doing so, they have to keep us glued to a story, to a fiction, to an untruth. And it's got to be exciting, and it's got to have drama and conflict, and it's got to have all of the elements of a good story. And so even if it's based on truth now, we're not quite sure where the truth begins and where the story takes over. So yeah. Then there is that commercial that comes in, and it tells us everything's going to be okay if you buy this product. Products are going to be sold to us. And then, you know, so it's this vicious cycle. But we in reality have the power. We can just stop buying things.
Yeah, that's what I would love to see. Everybody just stop buying. If everyone didn't buy anything for one day, you know how much power we would have?
Well, I mean, it's possible. That's why the stock market shows you that how volatile that simple concept is. And that's on a much, much more general, I'm speaking in generalities now, very broad strokes here. This is just coffee talk, you know, the free coffee.
Coffee talk. Let's talk about holidays.
Yeah, because the segue here is, you know, the other big myth is about the big holiday that's coming up, and or fable that a turkey is important for Thanksgiving. You have to kill a bird. And we all know, well, not all of us, but we
not
all
not all of us.
You and I know, and Mr. Grillo knows, that that's just a big lie. And
the turkey appeared later on the scene. It wasn't originally the centerpiece of the Thanksgiving holiday.
Right.
And it's such a romantic fable that the poor pilgrims who had starved and suffered the winter before, now, thanks to the Native American Indians, had a reasonable harvest and they were celebrating and everyone was happy. And then later on we go and just wipe out that yeah. entire race of people.
Right. And, you know, there's so much happening now with the truth finally coming forward that you can have a lovely Thanksgiving feast, a huge Thanksgiving feast, without a bird. And we have a great Thanksgiving show that we've just put back up that we filmed a few years ago. And it has some incredible dishes. And we've just gotten better and better at doing this. And every year, we're not going to be home for Thanksgiving this year. We're actually going to be with my family in California. But we're going to make some of these incredible dishes. And I can't wait. So the one thing,
let me tell you some of my favorites for me. You know, I know Thanksgiving traditions, and there's another fun word, tradition, mm-hmm. which we'll blast later. But we all have different traditions based on our family and our culture and our environment. And my Thanksgiving, I like to have apple pie. I like to have pumpkin pie. And after decades of veganizing and gluten-free-izing, right. I'm very happy with the apple pie recipe we have and the pumpkin pie recipe we have for Thanksgiving. We even have a savory pumpkin pie, not just a sweet one.
No, it's amazing. But, you know, everybody talks about, well, the main event, you have to have this big dead bird on the table that's stuffed. And, okay, you want to have something to present. You want to have a main event to present. And so we did this thing with a red curie squash with polenta stuffing. It's on our website. It's amazing. It's gorgeous. And if you've ever had it looks kind of like a pumpkin, but it's more like a pumpkin that you would find in in like The Hobbit. You know, it's got this really cool color to it, and it's really attractive, and they come in all shapes and sizes. And we stuff that with this amazing polenta stuffing. And it's gorgeous, and no one, and you know, you could still pour the gravy.
You can
all over
slice it. That's what's great about it.
You can slice it. The stuffing is right there, and you know, you were talking just a minute ago about these traditions, and what we are trying to do at Responsible Eating and Living is we're trying to re-script the traditions. Mm-hmm. You'll still get enough food, but the other thing is connect the dots to that. Bird, that bird feels, that bird is a living, breathing creature, and we aren't connecting those dots because we aren't shown how horrific the conditions are. That, you know, of course they give you another myth now that it's free range and it runs around and it has this lovely life before it gets its head chopped off, but that's such a myth. Such
a huge myth. And another myth is that these birds are dumb. And yet are more and more studies that show that in some ways they're smarter than us.
I think so. You know, there was a really profound moment that we had in Florida, bringing Florida back up again, where you and I were trying to take this romantic walk along the beach, along the pier, our first day there. It was a nice weather. And we saw these men on the beach pulling in these nets and dumping these beautiful silver gorgeous fish onto the sand, and they were flopping around, and I looked over at you and I said, I can't even believe how I feel right now. I feel sick. And you said, yeah, it's because you're watching these creatures suffocate. And And from that point on, it was just, my mind was just going nuts, because I thought, I'll never be able to walk on the beach again and feel like I, and not feel like an activist. And then we tried to take a walk a couple of days later on a pier, and we thought, okay, here's this beautiful pier, and we walk through this restaurant to get onto the pier, and there's like 50 people fishing and chopping up fish for bait, and just, it was like the theme from Psycho was being underscored. It was like, yeek, 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 yeek. And all of these close-ups of all of these poor dead fish were, I thought I was having a nervous breakdown. It was very strange. And, you know, I've only been a vegan now for less than 10 years. It's going on 10 years in 2017. And I'm, you know, I'm, I can't even, this, these were things that I used to do, and I used to feel nothing when I did them. And now when I see other people doing them, it just tears me apart. It's really,
you know, sometimes I feel responsible, maybe even guilty, that I help in opening the eyes
of people.
And people say ignorance is bliss. You know, if you hadn't made this switch and had this epiphany, you could happily walk along a beach and see a bucket of suffocating fish and not think twice about it.
Well, no, I'm really happier where I am now in a very abstract, paradoxical way. I'm much more, you know, and I think everybody, this is what I'm getting at, is everybody would feel this way too. Because I, you know, I was a big, big eater of animals before I became a vegan. And I was 100 pounds heavier. Everybody, you know, everybody has their own story. Mine was weight. Other people might have been health. But mine was literally weight. I mean, I just had a big, keyword big, problem with weight and eating. And it wasn't that I ate junk. I just ate a lot of food. I have Italian ancestry, and food is, you know, Italian do food. I mean, it's just, you don't have just a simple little meal. You have a truckload of food, at all, especially at all the holidays. And a lot of that has to do with meat and salamis and all of these traditional foods. And breaking that habit, immediately the weight started to come off. And people ask me now, do you have a diet that you can give me? And I say to you, and I'll say it till I'm green in the face, diets don't work. I'm never going to give you a diet. You know, what I did was I stopped eating animals, and I adopted a plant-based lifestyle. I guess you could call that a plant-based diet, but, you know, it's so simple. Just cut out all of the animal products and watch the weight come off. Sure, you know, Oreos are vegan. Sure, there's a lot of products now, like, you know, vegan butters and things that will make you fat if you just eat those. But you've got to be, you got to understand that there are certain things that, again, people are going to market to you, that's going to tell you, you know, eat this, it's vegan. Even the vegans are doing it now, where they're making these products that are just unhealthy. So,
you know, we're back to the myths again. And there are many, many food myths. And one of the biggest food myths, because people are so busy and people want to eat better and they want to eat healthier, but they feel overwhelmed. Their lives are so busy. They don't have time and they don't have skills. They're right. Not difficult skills, but they don't know what to do in the kitchen. And they're attracted to these myths about recipes that can be made in 10 minutes or right. Things that can be done so quickly.
Right.
And yeah, it's to make food and make it healthy requires planning, preparation, organization, and practice. And
right.
You can make food quickly once you've got a hang of it and you've prepared things
right.
In advance.
Yeah, one thing about responsible eating and living that you have to understand is we're a not-for-profit organization, we don't make any money per se, right? I mean, we're not here to make money. We're here to give you the truth. So it's going to take you a long time to prepare food that's going to be satisfying for you if you don't have any skills in the kitchen. But if you stick with it, the truth is you're going to feel a lot better about slow cooking as opposed to getting a meal done in 10 minutes. I don't even know of a meal that can be cooked in 10 minutes. Even if it's taken out of the freezer and put in a microwave, it's going to take you at least, you know, 2 or 3 hours of your life to get that meal into your freezer, because you're going to have to go shopping, you're going to have to buy gas, you're going to have to take the subway or wherever you live. You know, you're confusing time with what you deserve. You deserve to spend that amount of time, whatever time it takes, to prepare this meal that's going to nourish your body as well as your spirit.
Gary.
Yeah.
We just have a few more minutes, and I wanted to get back to Thanksgiving and talk about the Three Sisters, which is a favorite food combination of mine: squash, corn, and beans. It's a beautiful, almost poetic way. These three foods, the plants, corn, and squash, and beans, support each other in growing,
right,
and then go so well together in dishes. And that is what should be the feature for Thanksgiving, the Three Sisters.
And it's also an amazing play by Anton Chekhov, who was an environmentalist and a vegetarian. So check him out. There's a great play on Broadway that we are actually going to go see tonight called The Cherry Orchard. It was his last play. And so, yes, the Three Sisters, definitely. And you know what, Karen? I can't even believe we just talked for a half hour and I didn't even get to half of the stuff I wanted to talk about. But you need to get to talking to Robert Grillo about Farm to Fable. It's an awesome book, and he's much more articulate than I am, and he can get much more passionate about – I think he'll agree with some of the things that I'm saying and that you're saying and even elaborate more on it. So, and I'm going to go get ready to go see Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard.
Good. I can't wait. I'm going too.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Gary.
So happy holidays, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving if I don't talk to you until then. And keep listening to Responsible Eating and Living's brilliant woman, Karen Hartglass, the activist. And I would vote for you if you were running for president, Karen.
Thank you, Gary.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'm not going to. I'm too smart.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Gary DiMattei, the co-founder of Responsible Eating and Living.